I'm very happy now to welcome back to the show Janet Davidson and Adam Harvey. Janet is the director and Adam is an actor in the play Moonlight and Magnolias, which opens at the Santa Fe Playhouse tomorrow, Thursday night. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So Moonlight and Magnolias is a play. I didn't even know about this play. It is about the writing of Gone with the Wind, which it turns out to be an epic story all its own.
Yes, that's really true. It's amazing. I didn't know anything about it. It has been presented. I think they did it in Albuquerque at some point. It opened in New York in, I think, 2006 or 5. And actually, Tom Romero had found the play and brought it to me, and I read it, and I just loved it. I thought it was really funny and poignant at the same time, and such a true picture of Hollywood. After spending 25 years in Hollywood, it was amazing to realize that in 39 they were going through the same things that we're going through in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s still.
Now, let's talk about it, because there is some historical truth to this. I mean, obviously it's a play, and so it had to be dramatized, but what really happened?
Well, as we understand it, and this is in the history books, David O. Selznick was 3 weeks into production on Gone with the Wind, the movie, when he just...
So it was written, it was cast,
he was shooting. He had shot The Burning of Atlanta already, he had shot quite a bit of the beginning of it. And he just must have had a bad dream or something, and he just suddenly hated the scenario and hated the script. So he woke up one morning, went into his office, fired the current director, which was George Cukor, fired the screenwriter, and brought in Ben Hecht early in the morning, and also brought in Victor Fleming, who Adam plays, to rewrite the script. And shutting down production and at any time is really big deal in Hollywood. To shut it down on the biggest movie that was ever made at that point, and this huge hullabaloo about this movie, was very brave of him to realize that he did not like what was happening and he wanted to shut it down. So
he
does that.
And it was because of the script. It wasn't the actors.
No. He absolutely hated the script for whatever reason. And he'd gone through already about 10 versions. Hemingway had a chance at it. Fitzgerald had a chance at it. And he didn't like any of them. So when he brought Ben Hecht in, he figured that was it. There was only one small problem, and Adam can tell you about the problem that Ben had.
The problem that Ben had. Which one?
That he never read the script.
He had never read the book. That's absolutely the case. And from what I understand, this is not necessarily what happens in the play, but I do understand that Ben Hecht was ultimately he kind of gave up and said, you know something, the script you've got is okay. Let's just cut it down a little bit. And,
really?
And that was his contribution. He said, I don't want credit for it or anything like that.
No, he didn't.
Because he's uncredited.
He's uncredited. It actually went to, what was his name? The other, I can't remember his name.
Sidney Howard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this play, Moonlight and Magnolias, we have tremendous drama among these three men. Basically, Selznick locks you, Victor Fleming, Adam Harvey, in the room with Ben Hecht, and says, "I'll come back when there's a."
No, he stays.
He actually stays with them. Yeah,
we
stay in this room until it's done, and it was a full 5-day thing where they didn't leave the room.
They were locked
until
in,
it was done,
and
yeah.
He fed them only peanuts and bananas because he thought that was brain food and that would help them. And so the three of them were locked in the room, and since Ben had not read the book, it was up to David and Victor Fleming to act out the entire book for him so he could understand it.
Right.
And all of that is factual.
And one of the things that's great about the play is that you have these guys playing all the different, playing Scarlett O'Hara, playing Prissy, playing Rhett Butler and everybody.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it actually winds up being something of a farce. I mean, the play's structure winds up being pretty farcical. Although obviously, I think it goes much deeper than that. Ultimately, but it sends you through this entire kind of farcical journey. Very, very funny stuff.
As with any group of three men or three or anybody that'd be locked in a room for that much time. There's a lot of hysteria that happens that's very funny,
right.
And a lot of physical humor that's quite funny. Mm-hmm. And then there's moments of real truth that comes out. When you're that fatigued, you're liable to say things that you really believe. And so yeah. There's a lot of truth that comes out. And Victor Fleming's background, we're not, well, there's a certain amount of speculation about what his feeling was. After all, the war was just about to start. It was 1939.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ben Hecht is a huge crusader for the Jewish cause. And most of the directors in Hollywood at that time had actually, or a good amount of them, had fled from the Nazis. So they were there, and it was as Hollywood, I mean, they're always talking about today the Hollywood liberal Jewish elite, and it wasn't any different back then. It was the same group of people that started.
Right.
So it becomes very interesting when they start bearing their soul about what they really believe about the Holocaust and what they really believe about what's about to happen. And
well,
what
the
they
Holocaust
really
wasn't even something that anybody...
They didn't know. Well, they knew that the Jews were fleeing because
no,
there
was
a Jewish relief.
It was looming on
the
horizon, yes. For sure.
Right, but yeah. I don't think anybody was using the word and
no.
And the
no.
No.
Great atrocities. Some hadn't been perpetrated, and even the ones that hadn't weren't known yet.
Right.
That's exactly right. But definitely Ben Hecht was keyed in very clearly on what was happening at the time and what he suspected was about to happen. And he was a major force for trying to save, in the Jewish relief, trying to save
right.
The whole situation.
And Victor Fleming, on the other hand, was rather clueless as to the whole affair. He was pretty, at least that's kind of the
that's
way
that's how
I'm
we're playing him, but
it's not fair to Victor Fleming.
Yes.
I have to say my performance is not necessarily fair to the biographical Victor Fleming.
Play him, are you directing him as being anti-Semitic?
No.
No?
No.
No.
Old, no. No, I've pushed him to the edge of the comic relief because right. When Ben and David get into it, somebody has to say, oh, guys, please stop.
Yeah.
Right.
Or else we'll be like dragging our way through 2 hours. And it's not. It's quite funny in places.
Right.
So.
And there was actually something that Janet said to me early on in the process that kind of really stuck with me and that I started building the character off of. And that was that directors in Hollywood and that, you know, there's nobody better than Janet to tell you about actual, you know, like Hollywood culture. Directors in Hollywood, even when they do know what they're talking about, put on an air of that they do know what they're doing. And there's like this constant trying to keep the mask up, keep the facade going.
Yeah.
I know I'm totally in control at every single moment.
Right.
And it's nice to see that kind of facade, because that gives you something to really work with, because eventually that facade gets torn down in this 5-day process of eating peanuts, bananas, and trying to hash out this script and you know, playing every single character in the script regardless of gender. All of that kind of winds up kind of deconstructing Fleming.
Now we're talking to Janet Davidson and Adam Harvey about the play Moonlight and Magnolias that's opening tomorrow night at the Santa Fe Playhouse. One thing that's also so interesting when you're sitting in the audience watching this play is you realize that no matter how great something is going to be, nobody knows beforehand that it's even going to have any success at all.
Absolutely.
And the fear of failure and the sense that this is just a ridiculous enterprise in the first place was right there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, Victor Fleming has the line, it's all a crapshoot anyway. And it really is.
You
I mean,
never know.
The investors in this world, you know, they invest in a surefire hit, and as they say in the film, it doesn't make anything. Mm-hmm. And then you invest in something, you think, oh, yeah, forget it. And it makes a fortune. There's
right.
Really no way, you know. And it's in the script, and I think it's probably true, is that David Selznick offers Victor Fleming a piece of the film or a flat fee. And he says, oh, I'd like the flat fee. I don't want a piece of this.
Is right. That right?
Yeah, he winds up taking the fee, which is
amazing. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they, you're absolutely right about that because, I mean, you never know. You never know. I mean, you can be... I understand there's no set formula for this kind of thing, like whether a film is going to succeed or not. You can have day after day a terrible disaster happen on the set, and yet the movie winds up being this glorious, you know, thing. Maybe it was the adversity that created the brilliance to begin with.
And well, and like Casablanca, they were still writing it as they were filming it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times we've done that. Or we've gotten pages on a show that I've been on, and I feel, oh, well, we shot that 2 days ago, so throw those pages away. Mm-hmm. It's just it's constantly rethinking, and then sometimes you have to go back and say, wait, what did I see that I loved in the beginning? And I think that's true for anybody who's right. an actor or a director or a writer or anything in this business, in this crazy world, is every once in a while you have to stop and say, wait a minute, what was it in the very beginning that attracted me to this? You know, and for me, there's so many things in Moonlight and Magnolia, and I think the continuing debate about who really is the creator, is it the writer, the director, mm-hmm. the actor, the producer, yeah. and each one of these three guys has their argument about why it's them. And of course, being a director, I sympathize with the director, end of it. yeah. But I do also know that each part makes a movie, and one of the big problems is when one person tries to do it all, they can't see the other side. They get lost. And it's only a very special, like Steven Spielberg would say, that can actually wear all those hats. David Selznick was somebody who really could wear a lot of hats.
He had amazing.
Amazing track record. And there was a reviewer who was very interesting who asked me if David Selznick, he'd done his homework, and David Selznick had tried to recreate it by doing A Farewell to Arms, and what did I think went wrong in that movie? And it's very clear that there are two main things, and if anybody's seen that movie, the lead female, Jennifer Jones, is a good gal. And so you really don't care about her. You care about Scarlett.
We like Scarlett.
Because she's so bad. She's just like a bad Valley girl who really you root for on some level. Right. She's so beautiful. And Rock Hudson just didn't have the cojones, shall we say, mm-hmm. as Clark Gable had. So that's the casting that fell apart in. You know, so there's a million ways a movie can fall apart.
And one of the things they had to do away with was political correctness when it came to Gone with the Wind. I mean, they had to do away with this idea of emancipation even. Emancipation wasn't even a topic in the film.
Right.
It's a film about the Civil War that doesn't even mention the word.
Right.
You know?
Doesn't mention slave.
Slaves. Just slave labor.
I think,
what word are we not
But what I mean is, that the topic of its, the ethical issue.
It's okay to have slaves.
Is left completely out of the script.
Yeah, and they're happy.
And yeah, they're happy slaves. Old Man River, they love it. You know?
Slaves.
They're happy being whipped and everything.
It is, and you would never think that such a film would make it. I mean, what maybe Birth of a Nation, but that was a silent, you know, much much earlier. But that Gone with the Wind should come
it's
along
Scarlett.
And do the same thing.
I think it's really Scarlett.
It's Scarlett.
I think we all want to believe, and that's what David held on to, Selznick, mm-hmm. is that we all want terribly to believe that somehow we will succeed, and that, believe it or not, even though it's a lousy line, tomorrow is another day, and that you can recreate yourself the next day.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, what you're talking about, I think there is this American willful blindness to the fact that when somebody has a fabulous mansion, it's off somebody else's back. We don't like to think about that. And a movie like that kind of glamorizes the idea that you can have beautiful, fabulous wealth and nobody else is suffering.
Oh, I know. Rhett Butler is basically a war profiteer.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he makes his money is never addressed. It's just the fact that he has it.
But then he joins up and he fights.
He fights at Gettysburg.
You know.
Yeah,
but
he fights to maintain slavery.
You know, right, exactly. But in this day and age when people are losing their houses and everything, yes, Tara is an enormous house. It's not even a house, but the concept that something could burn to the ground or something could be ruined and you're still... Damn it, you're going to wake up tomorrow and recreate it, no matter what. That's something that I think David O. Selznick fell for, and I think it's what the American public fell for right around the coming
the
out of the Depression.
Exactly.
Somebody had that much guts and beauty to just keep on going.
The play is called Moonlight and Magnolias. It's written by Ron Hutchinson. Janet Davidson is the director. Adam Harvey plays Victor Fleming, and KSFR's own Dan Garrity plays Ben Hecht. Yeah. And we haven't talked that much about Ben Hecht, but he was a prodigious, amazing figure in Hollywood who wrote a lot of screwball comedies, who wrote Notorious, one of my favorite movies of all time, and was a person of tremendous talent and intellect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he also has this tremendous will to do the right thing. I mean, he is really willing to go to the ends to try to get the right thing done. And yet there is a line in the play, which is true, that he takes the money. You know, it's that conflict still, even though you have all of these great scruples. At some point, somebody hands you the $15,000, and you go, in those days, okay,
right.
I'll do it, you know.
Right. Right. No, Jen, but he winds up being the voice of the conscience in the play, Ben Heck does.
It opens tomorrow night, Thursday. There's a big gala on Friday, and it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays at 8 o'clock, Sundays at 2 o'clock, and it's for the next couple of weekends.
Right, and we have to say that Tom Romero does an amazing job as David. He's his passion is totally in that play.
That's right, I even mentioned, sorry, right. I didn't mention Tom Romero.
This kind of pretty much is Tom's baby in a lot of ways.
It is, in many ways it's Tom's baby, and his wife, Lori Romero, is doing just a great job of coming in every once in a while with peanuts and bananas and keeping us all sane.
For more information, santafeplayhouse.org and 505-988-4262. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.